Holder. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Caroline Coulter on behalf of Director George Lombardi, Director of Missouri Department of Corrections. This case today challenges the confidentiality provisions of Missouri's execution statute. Those confidentiality provisions require that identities of execution team members of Missouri's execution team be kept confidential. And the enforcement of these confidentiality provisions is limited solely to the individuals it seeks to protect, the execution team members. Director Lombardi has no authority to enforce and cannot enforce the confidentiality provisions under the statute. Furthermore, and because of that, Director Lombardi can take no act against the plaintiffs, a fact that is recognized in the district court's decision and a fact that's conceded by the plaintiffs. And it is this reason that Director Lombardi argues that he's entitled to 11th Amendment immunity and why there is no case in controversy between the parties today.
Wait, what about, you know, he had a he does have no authority to enforce it, but he has, to decide who's on the team. He has the authority to grant an exception, which the ACLU, I don't know if they asked for, and I don't remember in the record, but he could grant them an exception. Why is that not enough involvement, connection with the issue to say he has no immunity?
Your Honor, I think it's key for two reasons. First, the director's administrative duties required from him under the statute to define the execution team and name execution team members is a lawful act. The director's ability to name those team members is not affecting, or directly taking any action against the plaintiffs, but instead is required so that the state of Missouri can carry out its lawful executions. I mean, that in its core in our argument is that is the sovereign immunity that should be upheld.
Say that again?
The director's lawful acts taken under the statute are entitled to the immunity. The exception that Ex parte Young created was that the 11th Amendment cannot shield an official who is taking an unconstitutional act against a plaintiff. Here, the Director Lombardi is not taking an unconstitutional act against the plaintiffs. He's carrying out the lawful directives of the statute. Without an execution team and those members being appointed, the state of Missouri could not carry out its executions. That's the real dispute between the parties. Is what
did your
is
argument
the act challenge?
Really, as far as the ACLU is, he's not taking any act?
That's correct, Your Honor. The
and really, is your argument that he would never take any act unless it maybe denied them an exception?
Correct. Director Lombardi can't take any action against the plaintiffs. If the plaintiffs chose to leave this courtroom today and publish the records that they received from the department through an open records request, Director Lombardi could take no action. No state official could take any action. The only action, the only possible injury that could be suffered from plaintiffs is if they made a knowing disclosure of an execution team member. That execution team member could, in the future, file a private right of action against the ACLU for punitive damages or actual damages they would receive.
Just a practical matter, it's certainly conceivable that would chill their First Amendment rights. So how do they challenge it if they can't do it this way?
I think there's two methods that
wait until they're sued by somebody they disclosed.
That is one method. I think the Fifth Circuit noted that, and actually I can't remember the specific footnote in its decision, but it was talking about the enforcement of the private act. It's not saying that there's no remedy available, but at that time they can assert that argument. In addition, I mean, if
well,
the plaintiffs...
Absent them getting sued. How do they raise it? How do they challenge it?
Your Honor, I believe another course of action would be is if they wish to challenge the constitutionality of a Missouri statute, they could also certainly do so from the Missouri Supreme Court. But that's not what's happened either. This case is a very, I think, novel and unique question of 11th Amendment immunity. I know the cases that I think both parties cited to dealt with very different statutory provisions. Here, in at least those cases, such as Kitchen and Bishop and Missouri Protection and Advocacy and 281 Care, those involved plaintiffs where the named parties could at least take or have a statute that would take some sort of specific action against the plaintiffs. There is no similar set of facts here. And I think that's what makes it so unique, and I think a more complex 11th Amendment question. But it is that second part, the enforcement of an unconstitutional act against the plaintiffs, that is what is missing here. The chilling effect that plaintiffs allege, or the reason that they allege that they cannot publish those records, is because they fear a potential future lawsuit from an execution team member. They stated in their brief that's the only reason they removed the records. That is the only reason they have not put the records back up on the website. In addition, I think it's also important to note that the remedy that they've asked this court
Let me ask you this. This is kind of going back to what I asked for. Could they bring a mandamus action against the director and say, we want an exception, we want it's chilling our effect, we since the demand you give us an exemption?
Most likely not under Missouri law, because the director's
that's right, because it's,
the
it's the discretionary
discretion. Yes.
So let me ask you one. I had one other question. You say that the documents that were produced to the ACLU do not disclose any confidentiality, and then you make another separately from that. You say they cannot be forced to permit the disclosure because of confidentiality. It sounds a little inconsistent to me, if I understand it. So what is you're saying on one hand there's no confidential information, and the other we can't compel them to do anything. What are you saying there?
I think the reason there's two different issues, I think, before this court is because we are now at the motion for summary judgment stage. Originally, the plaintiffs alleged or pled that the records that they had identify or could identify those records, which is why we took the additional step of obtaining the affidavit from the custodian who reviewed the complaint, has firsthand knowledge of execution team members, said that he reviewed the documents, he turned them over, and there were no execution team members contained in those records. The enforcement of the constitution or the confidentiality provisions, I think, goes to the question of redressability. There is no case law, at least that I was able to find, where federal courts would order a state official to take a discretionary act of authorizing this type of disclosure. And I think taking that additional step in light, if the ACLU had records that identified team members, which at this stage in the proceedings, respondent argues that they do not. But if they had those records, directing the department director to authorize the disclosure only seeks an advisory opinion from this court of shielding a potential lawsuit that the plaintiffs could or could not even suffer. In addition, it would also or could potentially violate the confidentiality provisions of Missouri law. I think that the plaintiffs have kind of taken the position that the director should be able to just carte blanche, authorize the release of these records.
Who enforces the confidentiality? Let's say that they did the records due that were produced to the ACLU under the new definition of the execution team had confidential information in it. How is there any ability to the director, somebody, to get a hold of the ACLU and join him or seek an injunction and say, you know, don't do that, or they just say, please don't do that? They have any authority to do that?
I don't believe they do, Your Honor. I think the law is very specific and says that the confidentiality provisions are limited to a private right of action. You know, one would hope that the department would not produce any such records and be put in that type of position, but I think even if the disclosure occurred, I don't believe that the director would be authorized under Missouri law to then prohibit, because I think that would change the language of the statute. It would say that not only do the private individuals maybe have a right of action to prevent or stop or to seek a remedy from a disclosure, but it would also mean that the state official would be able to prevent the disclosure, and that's just simply not the way the statute was written.
Let me ask you this. It's probably way outside the record, but let's assume they did disclose something confidential, and the execution team member sues them. Is there any provision within the Missouri bureaucracy to fund that lawsuit, or is the member on their own for their own cost and expense?
Your Honor, I would have to take a look specifically at the funding. I don't know if there's anything that would fund the lawsuit, but without taking a specific look at the statute, I believe that there may be a provision that would allow them to reclaim damages.
The Attorney General's office gratuitously pro bono represent them?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. But I will certainly have the statute with
obviously,
me.
Obviously, you know where I'm going on this, that there may be some subtle support of this by the government, by the Missouri government.
And Your Honor, if that was the case, and if somehow maybe the Attorney General's office could be able to defend in those lawsuits.
Well, they wouldn't be defending, they'd be prosecuting.
Well, and I don't believe that there's nothing in where the Attorney General's office would be prosecuting the lawsuit. I think the private right of action would
solely be to... Well, they'd be prosecuting the individual's claim against the ACLU. In other words, they would step in and say, hey, you need some help, we'll handle this.
And I don't believe that there's any authorization under Missouri law for the Attorney General's
office. I don't know either. I don't know what Missouri provides, but...
But, I mean, I would think at least then, even in that scenario, I think if there was a statutory provision that would allow the Attorney General to defend the private execution team members, even then the Attorney General has not been named. I mean, the party before this court is Director Lombardi, and I would urge this court to find that Director Lombardi has no enforcement authority for the confidentiality provisions, which are the true issues here today, and that the injury is speculative. If there's no further questions, I'd like to reserve my time for a rebuttal.
Okay, you may.
Thank you.
Well, good morning again, Mr. Rothard.
Morning. It hasn't been long enough, but here
good
we are.
Good to have
again.
You back.
Thank
did
you.
Did you have a good break?
I did. Thanks.
Okay.
May it please the court. This case is a very narrow as-applied challenge to Section 546.720. It's not a broad challenge to the ability of the state to keep confidential members of the execution team. It is a challenge to the ability of the state to chill individuals from disclosing records that the state gave to them because they do or they could identify a member of the execution team, current or former. The bottom line is that the director of the DOC is given discretion by Section 546.720 to name a team, and also given discretion, in our view, to authorize disclosure of records. The language says that you can sue if the records have been disclosed without authorization of the director. In this case, the director is also the person who gave us the records. All of that is action that has some connection with the injury that's being experienced, the chill, which is an injury that exists right now. We're not talking about a future lawsuit. That would be an injury also. But as the Supreme Court recently clarified,
the chill is that you fear that you would be sued.
Yes. But it's an ongoing injury. It's an injury that's happening now in addition to a lawsuit that could come sometime later. You know, and I think really important to this discussion is
How is this any different than all of us in our everyday lives can be sued for about everything we do? I mean, you...
Well, it's not often you can be sued for speech, and certainly not often you can be sued for speech when that speech is disclosing governments that are documents that the government gave you. It's more like the Florida Star case where the U.S. Supreme Court handled where there was a lawsuit against a publisher for publishing the name of a rape victim, but those records were provided by the government to the reporter, and the Supreme Court found that was protected by the First Amendment. So that, you know, whether or not there's a First Amendment violation, which, you know, we're not to that stage of that case yet, there is a chill, and we should be allowed to argue.
Let's get to the point here of the director's authority or the director's connection here that you think defeats his immunity.
So our view and several cases from this court have not taken such a cramped view of the ex parte Young exception that you have to actually go out and be the direct enforcer of the law. You have to have some connection with the enforcement of the law. So the actions of the director are exercising his discretion first in naming the individuals or naming the definition of the execution team, which changes over time and then creates the cause of action. If he does not define the execution team in a way that includes you, you do not have a cause of action. But for him naming or expanding the definition of the execution team, most of the people named in the record name in the records we have would not have a cause of action. They only have it because of the director's naming of the execution team in the way that he has.
I can see how he can prevent enforcement by how he names the team or exempting.
Yes.
I see that. But how does he have authority to enforce otherwise?
Well, unless he's a member of the execution team, which under the current definition he could be, but we don't know, then he would. But I think they would even admit that. But this is not, he cannot go out and sue under this law and say, you must stop. We're not saying he has enforcement authority going forward. We're saying that he's already done his part. His connection to enforcement of the law has already occurred in his
actions. So if the law is you have to show he's part of the enforcement, are you conceding he's not part of the enforcement?
I'm saying...
As his title as director?
Well, I'm saying he has some connection to the enforcement of the law.
Okay, I mean, that's a different definition. I'm just saying, putting that aside a minute, if the law is you have to be have authority to actually enforce the law.
Right. If he was
and
the
he
person...
Would, he yeah, does not have...
He does
that.
Not have, unless he's a member of the execution team,
okay,
he does
so
not
now
have,
we move to
he cannot bring the lawsuit.
The other educated guess of what the Supreme Court's talking about, and we say he has to have some connection with it.
Some connection. So in Missouri Protection Advocacy Services versus Carnahan,
which is pretty vague what some connection means. But
the Secretary of State couldn't go out and sue and enforce the law or prevent someone from voting. But she did have some connection with the enforcement of the law, as did the Attorney General. And in the other Equal Protection versus Brunning and also Reproductive Services versus Nixon, the government officials named as defendants couldn't go out and sue, but they had some connection, and it was like this. It doesn't have to be
let's get to the
last connection.
Let's get to the specifics here. The director can designate the team at his or her discretion.
Correct.
The director can grant exceptions to disclosures.
Yes.
And his or her accepted. How are those connected to enforcement?
They are connected to enforcement because without those happening, there would be no chill because no one would have a cause of action against the ACLU for releasing records that do or could disclose a current or former member of the execution team. The other thing that he has done is give us the records. That is something else he has done, and without him doing that, there also wouldn't be any chill.
But that seems to swing the other way. That seems to be, says, okay, you got the records, so
you just can't show them to anyone? Well, I mean, giving you the records and then saying you can't disclose them to anyone would be akin to the Florida Star case, I believe, a First Amendment challenge. But so those are all actions that the director has taken that we submit are a close enough connection with the enforcement of the law, and that the enforcement of the law could not happen without those actions happening or inaction.
But you know, this is, it gets down to how many angels on the head of a pin type of thing. But how do you get, where do we draw the line? I'm talking about we as a court. How do we draw a line at some connection here? Because there's all kinds of decisions that are made by all kinds of people in every scenario, not just this statute. And they can't all of them be subject to suit. It seems to me like there has to be a closer nexus to the enforcement. And what I'm saying is, how do we express that in your favor, okay, to say this is so close to enforcement that it's some connection with it?
It's probably narrower than I would actually advocate for, but one way to say would be use kind of but-for causation. You know, but for this official's connection and actions, would there be enforcement? And if he's an integral part, if he's a necessary part, then
like that opens up any officer, any state official.
Well, I mean,
it takes some act in the process.
Yeah. Well,
to
in China,
liable.
Looking at this statute, for example, there's no other state official, other than the director of the Department of Corrections who has that kind of connection to enforcement. So I don't think there's any other state official that could be named. There's only
but that's
one.
What immunity is all about.
Right. Well, right. So if we named the governor, he would certainly have 11th Amendment immunity because there's no connection. If we named, I don't think that's such a broad test that it would allow anyone to be named as a defendant in any challenge.
I don't think that,
to state action.
I don't remember reading this, but did you ask the director for an exception for these documents?
There was at least one request for that, and the director's position was that he was not authorized by the statute to give an exception based on the
first provision.
That
he was not authorized? What did you say?
Yes, not authorized. That he is not authorized to give an exception because the first paragraph requires him to keep the members of the identity of the execution team confidential. And that his position is that that exception language applies only to like letting other members of the execution team know who each other are and administrative disclosures, letting a third party disclose.
Now I'm following you. I got it.
All right. I do want to point out, first of all, that the statute, it's not only releasing records or disclosing records that identify a member of the execution team. It's also you're liable if you knowingly release records knowing that they could identify a member of the execution team. So that's even a further step back that we submit shows standing. The execution team, the policy is at Joint Appendix 143, and it now includes anyone who provides direct support for the administration of lethal chemicals, including individuals who prescribe, compound, prepare, or otherwise supply the chemicals for use in the procedure. And that's important because the affidavit that's relied on of the custodian of records at page 141 and 142 of the joint appendix, it says what it says. It says none of the records I gave them in October 2013 actually disclose the name of someone who provides lethal chemicals. But it doesn't say anything about any of the other records, just the October 2013 ones, not the other sets of records. It doesn't say that the documents don't fall under that could reveal the name. It says that they don't reveal. It doesn't say that they might not ultimately reveal. And it says it does not reveal execution team members who supply lethal chemicals. So the policy is much broader than people who provide lethal chemicals. It also includes people who compound lethal chemicals and people who prepare any chemical that's used. You know, for example, you know, saline is a part of the policy that you can see at page 143. That's a chemical. It's not lethal, but it is a chemical used. So the provider of saline, you know, also would have a cause of action. That's someone who's named in these records. At document 52 in the district court, it's a sealed document where we listed the people that we think fit the definition of the execution team as defined by the director. I do just want to mention there is a Fifth Circuit case that was alluded to. We were trying to decide how to pronounce it before we got here. So I think we decided Okopolobi versus, it was an en banc case, plurality decision. And it has to do with a cause of action against someone who terminates a pregnancy without meeting certain statutory requirements. That case is distinguishable from this because there are all the action is done by third parties. The government officials aren't involved in any way. They created the cause of action, but there's no government official, you know, saying who goes to what abortion clinic or any involvement at all. And here the director is involved in several ways. So the bottom line is that Section 546.720 gives discretion to the director of the Department of Corrections. He has exercised that discretion, and as a result of that, the plaintiffs have been chilled. That should be enough to satisfy 11th Amendment immunity, so we'd ask you to affirm so that we can go back to the district court and talk about the First Amendment.
Okay, let's get back to the exception again.
Okay.
You've pointed out the state's position, and you were arguing it back to me, so I assume you don't have a problem with it. Is that the exception is only an exception to disclose the names among the various members?
I do have a problem with that interpretation of the statute, but I don't.
The question I have has to go with that. Well, if it's as narrow as that, how does that become connected with prosecution of it? That's my view. That would be totally internal.
I agree if that is the correct interpretation, but there's nothing in the statute at 546.720.3 simply says a person may not, comma, without approval of the director of the Department of Corrections, comma, knowingly disclose, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't say, you know, it's not narrowed that way in the language of the statute. But if it were, I would agree with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kolder, you have about 2.5 minutes.
I did want to touch on about three issues. I think first I'd like to touch on what was just discussed is just the scope of the director's ability to authorize or approve the disclosure. The provision that we are all challenging or that plaintiffs are challenging today is the subsection 3 provision, which states a person may not, without the approval of the director of the Department of Corrections, knowingly disclose the identity of a current or former execution team member. That specific provision has to be read within, I believe, the four corners of the statute. Under Missouri law, you cannot read a sentence in isolation in the statute. And I think very tellingly, the General Assembly was very clear in the provision directly above this paragraph that states that the identities of members of the execution team as defined in the execution protocol of the Department of Corrections shall be kept confidential. So
is it the position the state of Missouri that's an internal matter?
Yes, Your Honor.
That somebody external like the ACLU or any person coming saying, I would like an exception, that would not apply to him?
Yes, Your Honor. And the reason for that is if the director were to take that sort of act of any individual who says, I have some records from you. I think maybe that we have it. Can we go ahead and put these out there because we're worried about a future lawsuit? If the director were to go ahead and take the position of saying, sure, I'll approve it, or maybe not even in that specific case. Maybe it's an individual who has left employment with the Department of Corrections, and maybe they're upset or they want to identify those individuals. But ordering the director to give that kind of blanket disclosure would eviscerate the confidentiality provisions of the statute. I don't believe that the General Assembly had in mind, for instance, when it provided that provision that says the director of Lombardi could go to New York Times and say, here's a list of the people. You know, I'm authorized it. I'm okay with that. It would circumvent also the purpose of trying to create this private right of action. It's to prevent these individuals from having harm come to them if their name is disclosed. I think that's a very real fear and threat in this time. Also, very briefly, I'd like to discuss just the language that my opposing counsel used, the close enough connection or the but for. That really expands Ex parte Young beyond any decision this court has made. And not just this court. It expands it beyond those cases that the Supreme Court has found it. The critical question, I think, before this court, which, Judge Riley, I think you've clearly addressed here, is not the connection to the statute, but the connection to the enforcement of an unconstitutional act against a party. And we do not have it here. That's why we're asking this court to reverse the decision of the district court, finding that the director's inability to enforce the confidentiality provisions of the statute entitle him to 11th Amendment immunity, and that is why Article 3 standing is not present. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. We thank you both for your arguments. They were well done. It is a very important issue for both sides. It's an important free speech issue, and it's important for the state of Missouri as well, so it can do its obligations. So with that, we'll take it under advisement.